Hello, and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. I very much hope you were with me last week. I'd be in shock if I learned that you had missed these two features, these two guests. Smart interviewing makes great hiring. Cheryl Newfer, a founding partner in Pareto Consulting, explained why behavioral interviewing is superior to traditional methods and how any size nonprofit can get better hires through more sophisticated interviewing, whether you hire once a year or many times a month. And relationship mapping. Maria Semple, the prospect finder and our regular monthly prospect research contributor, helped you mine your data with tools that reveal relationships you didn't know exist among your donors. As always, she shares shared value. This was last week. Who wrote this copy? I need an intern so that I have somebody to blame. The situation is she shared valuable resources, many of them free. And if anyone wants to be an intern on the show and take blame every week, please send me your resume. This week, the law of attraction. It's the Melanie Show, I should say. The law of attraction. To attract major gift prospects and potential board members, you have to put your best foot forward to get what you are seeking. Melanie Schnoll-Begun is managing director at Morgan Stanley Private Wealth Management. She helps her ultra-high net worth clients make charitable gifts and get on boards, but she has practical and valuable advice that applies to any charity soliciting a major gift or recruiting a board member. And doyen of the day, Melanie West, writes the Donor of the Day feature for the Wall Street Journal and covers philanthropy. She'll explain how she likes to be pitched story ideas, giving you the best chance of getting major coverage for your donors, and also what she sees trending. And finally, there's a Buffett in the news. Melanie reported it yesterday, and we're going to talk about it today. On Tony's Take Two, in between the guests, it is my blog post this week, Take Time to Play Pirates. A few weeks ago, I played Pirates with my 7 and 9-year-old nephew and niece, and it got me thinking. And I'll tell you what I was thinking about. That's around 32 minutes into the hour on Tony's Take Two. Use hashtag Nonprofit Radio to join the conversation on Twitter. Join us there. We're monitoring it in the studio. Right, Sam? You're monitoring right now? Okay. We are. And when we take a break right now, and when we return, it is the law of attraction with Melanie Schnoll-Begun. So stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95% on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. With me now is Melanie Schnoll-Begun. She is a managing director and head of Morgan Stanley Private Wealth Management's philanthropic services. She serves as a philanthropic advisor to families, foundations, and family offices, working with the firm's ultra-high net worth clients. She's the incoming board president of the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation of New York and board treasurer of the Partnership for Philanthropic Planning. My show has been a sponsor at their National Conference on Philanthropic Planning the past 2 years. I'm very pleased that her work and her expertise brings her to the show. Melanie Schnoll-Begun, welcome.
Thank you so much, Tony. And just one correction, so I am the current.
Oh, you are the current.
The current
okay.
president of the board of the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. I have to say that
okay.
because the topic today that we're going to be talking about, if I didn't correct you about my particular officer position on, mm-hmm. on a board, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be selling the reason why I sit or why I think it's so okay. important to serve for causes you believe in deeply.
Well, this is why I need an intern. You and I would both
you
blame
do need
the intern. And it wouldn't have reflected on you badly at all. What is your work around with ultra-high net worth individuals? What are you doing with them?
Well, I think that my work is providing meaning in their life. Many of our clients come to us because they're in the middle of a transition. Perhaps they've sold their business. Maybe there's some interesting event that's happened in their life. Perhaps even a very sad event that's happened in their life. And we help them identify how to be very strategic, purposeful, and planned in their giving. For many clients, when they think about making a contribution, even a large contribution, they don't put a tremendous amount of thought into it. It might be a cause that they've heard about, maybe one that they're associated with, but they're not doing a deep dive into the background and the backdrop of what's really going on in that nonprofit organization or what else there might be out there in the world. So we try and provide that professionalism and then along the way make our clients professionals themselves.
What do you find motivates ultra-high net worth? And shortly I'm going to ask you, what is ultra-high net worth? But we'll work our way to that. But what do you think motivates their giving?
Well, for some clients, it's because someone's sick in their family. For other clients, it's because they're
Say a little more about that. Someone's sick, why are they giving in memory of the person, soon to be in memory, or what?
Hopefully they find a cure. Hopefully they find a cure.
Okay. Please, say some more about that.
Usually, clients witness a major change in their attitude. What they used to buy with their wealth no longer becomes important. And that's because the second that someone has a diagnosis in their family of someone who's ill, the only thing they're thinking about is identifying better treatment and perhaps a cure. So we find often that we come to the philanthropic table with someone who has just been given that diagnosis and is looking for the solution.
Where so many of us just, our resources, we go to the web and we learn as much as we can. But when we're talking about people with extraordinary wealth, they can actually invest it in a possible cure.
That's right. They want to buy it. They want to buy the cure. Mm. I think what's shocking and disappointing in many instances is that clients, no matter how wealthy they are, find out that they can't necessarily buy everything. So it is that deep investment for the long term, perhaps not even for the benefit of their family member who might be ill, but for others to find a cure, better treatment, better resources that might bring some of our clients to the table. Others are just deeply invested in their community. They want better cultural organizations. They want better education for their kids. Certainly in New York, that's a very big issue about private school, public school. And as your children are going through that educational problem situation where are there enough fine schools in New York to send our kids to? In many instances, they find that there's not. So our clients are interested in identifying how can they be the solution to the educational drama issue.
We have just a couple minutes before a break. What's the definition of ultra high net worth? What is this? How much money are we talking about?
Well, a lot more money than I have. I've always said that I really hope to one day be able to be my own client. Mm-hmm. But for us, ultra high net worth is really defined as clients who have a net worth of $25 million and more. The reality is that it's a very open span. For those clients, though, with $25 million and more, they usually have a significant amount of money that they can do something incredibly impactful with their philanthropy.
Mm, okay. How much does somebody who has that kind of wealth walk around with in their wallet? Like I have typically like $30 or $40 in my wallet. But I, so I would probably not be confused for ultra high worth if net worth if someone stole my wallet. I probably couldn't get away with that. But you know, like how much do you think they have just on an average day
in their wallet?
How much do you think they carry around?
Probably no cash. I think most very wealthy people typically put most of their stuff on cards today.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know what? Actually, I would go after your wallet if I knew that you were on the street. So just I'd watch your back.
With 30 or 40 bucks. Say, I was ready to go like 3 or 400 in my wallet, and then it'd almost be worth it to lose that much if I could get two muggers to think that I'm ultra high net worth.
Yeah.
Like, then they would share the story of the ultra high net worth guy, you know, among their prison friends, and I could, you know, get known that way. But I'm going about it the wrong way. You got to go down. Cash.
Now we need to talk about prison reform as far as philanthropy, right? So how can we make sure that those who come out of prison then are better off than when they went in?
And are telling the story of Tony Martinetti being ultra high net worth.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have to take a break. When we return, of course, Melanie Schnoll-Begun stays with me, and we'll continue talking about the law of attraction. So I hope you stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, this is psychic medium Betsy Cohen, host of the show The Power of Intuition. Join me at TalkingAlternative.com Mondays at 11 a.m. Call in for a free psychic reading. Learn how to tune into your intuition to feel better and to create your optimum life. I'm here to guide you and to assist you in creating the life that you deserve. Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
I'm Leslie Goldman with the U.S. Fund for UNICEF.
And I'm Casey Rotter with the U.S. Fund for UNICEF.
You're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. My guest is Melanie Schnoll-Begun. And Melanie, let's talk about when charities are trying to solicit gifts. I mean, you have your clients who are ultra high net worth, but you have, I think, very valuable advice for any charity that's trying to solicit any major gift, which may be $500 or $1,000 for some charities. What's your you see sort of faulty proposals a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I think that nonprofits believe they understand who the donor is, and they prepare something in advance. That's a critical error. You never know who that donor is. The famous saying, if you've met one philanthropist, you've met one philanthropist. Mm, yeah. So we try and teach nonprofits to perform radical listening. And that means spending the time to really understand why a donor may want to be a donor to their organization. The time will be incredibly valuable both for the nonprofit, but even more importantly for the donor. When a donor has the opportunity to talk about what they care about, why they care about the organization's mission, you hear things. You really hear things inside of that conversation, inside the conversation in the donor's head. So radical listening is a skill that we teach nonprofits to practice.
Oh.
And that skill is something that serves both board members, it serves the staff of nonprofit organizations, and at the end, you're really giving a service to a donor. I think that most of my clients find that no one listens to them well enough.
Yeah, but a charity that's soliciting a major gift, of however they define that, might feel that they're not going to get another meeting with this person. I mean, they get one shot. We finally got the meeting. We got 45 minutes. We better lay it all out because we may never get a second meeting.
That's right. So you walk into every meeting with the idea that if I really listen to this donor, I'm going to get the second meeting. If you walk in with a proposal thinking that you know who this person is and what they want to offer your organization, you're probably guaranteeing yourself that you're not going to see that donor again. So does it always work? It may not always work. If you begin practicing it well, if you spend so much time performing discovery on that donor, both in advance of the meeting mm-hmm. and then while you're sitting at that meeting, I think over time you'll find that your practice as a fundraiser will dramatically improve.
So you're suggesting that if you can move the donor while radically listening, then you'll get a follow-up meeting.
Right. So my suggestion is if you are performing radical listening, you will move the donor.
Okay. Oh, okay. Even without introducing your mission and your work in the first meeting.
Right, because you're going to hear from the donor what the donor wants to do instead of telling the donor what the nonprofit yeah. wants the donor to do.
And you do know there's a threshold interest. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gotten the first meeting.
Wouldn't have gotten the meeting. So it's an important skill. It's something that has been written about. And I think that we can't live in that fear. Fundraisers can't live in that fear that this donor will not be interested in talking to me again. Mm. In fact, most of the conversation is not a conversation. Most of the conversation is letting that ultra high net worth donor talk to you. And you're just there to listen.
Or again, it could be any level donor.
That's right.
And I've had, we have a regular prospect research contributor, Maria Semple is on, and she and I have talked about the value of the face-to-face meetings. And then she's a professional prospect researcher who knows all the web resources, you know, but she still recognizes that the greatest prospect research comes from a good conversation.
Absolutely. And she's absolutely right. Face to face, looking at a donor in their eyes. In many instances, I think being in the donor's territory, so a place where they're comfortable, where it's an environment, either their office, their home, maybe somewhere where they've recommended that they like to go for coffee. Usually I recommend going for a glass of wine because, you know, doesn't hurt.
Loosen up. Let's loosen up, yeah.
Exactly.
I've tried to get Sam Leibowitz to have wine here, but he's not doing it.
No? You're not performing radical listening.
Yeah. Right. I just radically demand. No. But I'm not a charity, so I think I'm exempt from everything.
You only have $30.
I'm exempt from everything we're saying.
But you only have $30 in your wallet. You are a charity.
You can't get a decent bottle of wine for $30. God knows that. So then the careful listening, radical listening, is going to inform your valuable proposal when it's the right time.
That's right. That's okay. Right. And the valuable proposal, some hints that we give to nonprofits as they're preparing that proposal. Brief. 3 points.
Yeah.
What are the key issues that you've heard the donor has said to you, the areas where they're really interested in supporting? Only talk about those areas, right? Putting in a proposal for stuff that you haven't heard because the organization needs it, but the donor doesn't want it. Mm-hmm. What's the likelihood of that getting funded? So 3 typically are the most that we suggest in a proposal going back to a donor that you know what they're interested in. You're going to get a much better response.
Okay. Other tips for the proposal itself, for the written document? Are you brief? Couple of pages, right?
Couple of pages. Yeah. In fact, most of our clients today, they don't want to read stuff, right? And they fear that if the nonprofit is spending so much time and resources preparing proposals, then they may not be spending the money that I'm giving to the organization on doing the work.
Oh, yeah?
So
yeah, you hear that.
In many instances, okay. It's brief, short. In fact, nonprofits should ask the donor, how would you like me to present a proposal? Is it even something that you want in writing? Or should we just have another conversation? I would welcome that second conversation so that now, the second meeting, the donor's prepared to do their own radical listening.
Right. Isn't there a problem sometimes when a donor gets sort of passed off from somebody who knows the work very well to the fundraising professional who's going to, the closer? It's like in a car dealership going to, which I have very bad memories of as a child, buying my first car was awful. But at a car dealership, like going from the salesman to the finance manager.
Exactly.
You go in that office and the door gets closed or something, you know. But being passed from the, maybe the executive director or someone who knows the work well to the closer, the fundraiser, doesn't something get lost there sometimes?
Yeah. What gets lost is the gift. No one wants to be handed off. Everyone in that nonprofit organization, both from voluntary leadership to professional staff, should be able to talk about programming. If the executive director is the one who has the contact with that donor, if it's a board member who has the contact with that donor, or if it is the professional fundraiser that has the contact with that donor, the conversation should be between those two people. Bring in others. Include others in the conversation, but don't hand a donor off. I have a client situation that happened with a large university hospital. Incredible organization doing tremendous work. And this client's, unfortunately, this medical institution was not able to save the life of our client's husband. But she wanted to honor him. She wanted to memorialize him. And the doctor who was treating her husband was the individual that she wanted to leave a contribution for so that he can continue doing the great work that he began with her husband. Many of the conversations happened between her and the doctor. It was intimate. She could see clearly what she wanted to accomplish. And then when it came down to the close, she was handed to a development director, a fine development director, someone who spent years in the business, but it was so disconnected. And she felt that...
Were you there? Were you there for these meetings?
So I was there after the fact.
Okay.
So I came in to help save the gift.
Okay. All right.
And this donor started working with us after she felt that brush off from the doctor. Mm. And it was completely unintentional.
Right.
So totally unintentional.
But it's just protocol.
Protocol.
It was an innocuous handing off. But it's just the way things are done.
He wasn't supposed to close.
Yeah.
That's someone else's responsibility. So what I teach both boards as well as professional staff, it's everyone's responsibility to close. If you're the one who has the relationship, you need to be confident enough to make the ask, and you need to be prepared enough to close.
Mm. And if it's, I guess if it's a really technical gift, which it could be at large dollar amounts, then at least include in your case, the doctor, but generally the program, the work expert, in the conversations.
Absolutely.
Don't leave him or her out in the hall while now the professional closer, you know, goes through his or her shtick.
That's right. So and you know what? The attorneys, the accountants, all the financial advisors, all of those professionals need to play a role in the process. If the donor wants them to be included in the conversations about the specifics of the gift, that's great. But there's the technical aspects of giving, and then there's the emotional aspects of giving. And what I see getting lost, it's never technique, right? You could draft a perfect trust. It could be absolutely accurate. The document itself could get an A++ in any fine law school.
Right.
But if the donor is not connected emotionally to the gift, it doesn't matter what the document says.
Melanie Schnoll-Begun is Managing Director, Head of Morgan Stanley Private Wealth Management's Philanthropic Services, and we're talking about the law of attraction, basically how to look good when you're either soliciting a gift or soliciting someone for board membership, which is what I'd like to transition to now, okay? Appealing to a board, appealing to a potential board member. Since you're working with ultra-high net worth people, I'm going to guess that sometimes they're approached because they're very wealthy, and how do they feel about that?
Yeah, so in the law of attraction, it's rarely because they're really good-looking. Now, many of them might be hot, right? But it's usually because they're wealthy. So similar to the idea of marriage, right? So when I got married, I married for love. I married for looks. There's a little bit of money too. That's always wonderful when you think that
you
that
had
might
asked
happen.
Me before if you can say sex on the show. Is this the part where you were thinking
it's
of
coming.
Saying it?
Oh, it's okay. coming. It's okay. coming.
It's coming.
Sex
okay.
is you have to have a little foreplay before sex. So it's
we're
coming.
Getting there.
It's
okay.
Coming.
See,
we're,
I'm rushed.
We're getting,
right? Yeah. See,
we're getting
that's
there.
My,
you're rushing
my,
it.
That's
you're
always been
it.
My problem.
Yeah.
Right,
you're rushing it. You're rushing.
Well,
it.
Well, among others, but let's keep it focused on ultra high net worth and law of attraction.
Let's take this conversation out of the bedroom.
Right.
So the opportunity of creating a marriage between a potential board member and an organization is incredibly important. So the reason donors believe that serving a nonprofit is an appropriate step for them is because they've been courted well. It's because they find the organization incredibly attractive and good looking. It's because they want to spend a lot of time with that organization. It's because they want to see that organization grow and really achieve incredible impact. Very similar to a marriage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The problem with marriages is half of them end in divorce. So the same is true with nonprofit board service. You're excited at the beginning, right? You can't wait for that next kiss, can't wait for the next date. And then quickly, within the first year, if the nonprofit doesn't really know how to work well, play well, dine the donor well, doesn't understand where they like to go to, how they like to vacation, if the nonprofit doesn't know how to use the donor to his or her maximum capacity, they get bored. They get disenchanted. And the worst thing is donors cheat, right? Just like what happens in many families that fall apart. Mm. They begin looking at other opportunities that really do want them, thinking that it's better on the other side.
So they're feeling remorse about having joined this board. Everything was great in the beginning. Right, the honeymoon stage, but after
Exactly right. So spend your time, nonprofits should spend their time thinking about whether or not this is a person they want to marry. Is this a person that will bring value to this relationship? Can we grow together? And what do we each bring to the relationship? It has to be more than just money.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just like many families, right? If all you're going after is the wealth, then a marriage for many, many years will fall apart.
Yeah. The board member, potential board member wants to know that they're going to be used effectively.
That's right. Utilize. We don't use board members. We utilize board members.
Okay. Okay. Taking over the show? No. Let's see. But a lot of times charities need an expertise. We need an accountant. Or we feel we need an attorney in some specialty, real estate maybe or something. So they're seeking that profession, but that is contrary to what you're recommending, right?
So I think what board members need to be and what boards need to do to get the right people on their team is they have to look for people different than themselves. What happens with most nonprofit boards is you look around the board table and everyone's the same. Right, because it's a friend introducing another friend.
Yeah.
They come from similar backgrounds.
Especially smaller charity, it's a friend of the executive director or the founder.
Absolutely, right. Especially small nonprofits, and specifically when they're getting off the ground. Right, so it's the founder, it's the founder's best friend, it's the founder's sister, and perhaps someone who worked for them at one point in time or an intern. So nonprofits really need to think about how can we bring true diversity to our board. Professionalizing a board must include accountants, financial advisors, lawyers, but you can't just look at them as a lawyer. You need to look at them as a lawyer that has a mission, that their interest must be tethered, if not tied, to the nonprofit organization, that they're a lawyer, that's their skill set, but ultimately, we know that even if they weren't a lawyer, that they really support the work of that organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to have you bring something out that we had talked about, that very wealthy people are not uninterested in working for small or mid-sized, working among, being utilized by small and mid-sized charities. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think that many very wealthy clients believe that they can be better utilized in a small nonprofit organization. In fact, that's where most of their money came from. So the majority of our client base started their own closely held businesses. And they realize what it means to roll up their sleeves, to get dirty. They love that kind of opportunity in a nonprofit organization. So when you come into these large nonprofit organizations, very bureaucratic, very political, so many individuals that look like them. So it is even more attractive for wealthy people to see that, you know, my gift will make a significant difference here, but my time may even be more valuable.
Melanie Schnoebel-Gunn is a managing director and head of Morgan Stanley Private Wealth Management's philanthropic services. Melanie, thanks very much for being in the studio, being a guest.
Tony, thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Right now, we take a break. When we return, it's Tony's Take Two. And then after that, doyen of the day, Melanie West. Stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back. It's time for Tony's Take Two at roughly 32 minutes into the hour. My blog this week is Take Time to Play Pirates. A couple of weeks ago, I played Pirates with my 7-year-old nephew and my 9-year-old niece. And it got me thinking about the value of taking time for play, whether that's play with kids or play with adults. It's a chance to rest your mind and think about things and ideas completely unrelated to what your work may be day to day. It can be mindless play, and that could be even mindless play with adults. You might have fun getting yourself mindless with adults and then playing. You know, talk politics without any restraint that we have in our day-to-day lives. All, I think, makes you, at least I feel this, makes me feel more refreshed, makes me more focused at work. I think when I take time off and I return, I'm just performing better. And I'm hoping that you'll get some of those same results from taking time to play. Could be pirates, could be something else. And that's what's on my blog this week. My blog is tonymartinetti.com. Also want you to know that we have a LinkedIn group for the show. If you have a suggestion of guests or topics for the show, again, just go to the blog, tonymartinetti.com, and there's a very prominent link to all of my social media properties, presences, including the new LinkedIn group for the show. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, April 20th, 2012, the 16th show of the year. With me now is Melanie West. She writes for the Greater New York section of the Wall Street Journal. She writes the Donor of the Day column and covers the philanthropy beat. Before that, she wrote for the Weekend Journal about the wine industry and wine travel. She joined the Journal in 2006. She's a graduate of Cornell and the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Melanie West lives in Manhattan with her husband, and I'm very glad that her work brings her to the studio. Melanie, welcome.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Donor of the Day. What's the purpose there?
Well, as you know, we've had a long commitment at the Journal to report on the philanthropic interests of our readership. Yeah. And for many years, we had a column that was Gift of the Week. And during the economic downturn, we, sunset that column in favor of resurrecting it with the Greater New York section, which is our city section in the Wall Street Journal, available in New Jersey and Connecticut and certainly Manhattan and the boroughs. And the decision there was to create a column that was daily and looked at all kinds of philanthropy, be it a $40 million gift or a gift from a teenager who does something that's incredibly charitable. So that's what the column is. It runs most every day in the paper, assuming that we have room for it.
Okay.
And it's a pleasure to do.
And they preferred the alliteration, clearly. I like alliterations on my show. Gift of the Week doesn't sound snazzy. Donor of the Day. Sounds pretty cool.
I guess.
All right. And Doyen of the Day. You're the Doyen of the Day. I'm dubbing you Doyen of the Day.
Thank you.
And you just surpassed 500 columns. I know, not you personally.
Yes, we've done 500 of them.
Wasn't it just last month, I think?
Yep.
Okay.
And that's, you know, it's been a great opportunity to speak with the, diverse group of people here in the city and to learn about their passions. And I won't say that it isn't a challenge to create that column every day or
every
at least 5 days a week.
Right.
It is. I hope your readers, your listeners have some ideas for me and they can certainly reach out to me.
And we're going to talk about that. How long have you been doing the column?
Over a year now.
Okay.
I've written the majority of that 500.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
Okay. And your predecessor was Shelley Banjo.
Correct.
Is that right? Who's now on the Connecticut or Westchester beat, I think? Southern Connecticut, Westchester?
Correct.
Okay. You sometimes do a mensch of the day. What's that about?
Well, it's someone who's a do-gooder. And it's for people who have extraordinary passions and do unusual things. So, for example, we've had a gentleman who ran for 3 days straight who was raising money for multiple myeloma cancer research. Mm-hmm. We've had a teenager who, collected a bunch of money through UNICEF's trick-or-treat program. Mm-hmm. They had raised the most amount of money of any kids in the country, and that was up in Connecticut. These are those are areas to talk about people's philanthropic gifts without them being huge gifts and make for an unusual story and certainly a very charming story.
Okay. So how do you like to be pitched? Email, over phone? What's your preference about being pitched for Donor of the Day?
I get pitches in all kinds of different forms, really.
Yeah. Preference? Is there a way? I'm sure people would rather give it to you in the form that you prefer.
I actually don't have a form that I prefer. What I really need to know is that the individual who is to be profiled is comfortable talking about the size of their gift, the quantity of their gift.
Right. The dollar value is always included, right?
It's a critical fact in the story. We are a paper that reports on transactions, and these are philanthropy transactions. And so the amount of the gift is critical. Of course, it needs to be a recent gift, and it needs to be news. Most of the stories that I do, in fact, 99% of the stories that I do are exclusive. So the story needs to come to us first. Mm-hmm. People need to be, the donor needs to be compelling. It needs to be someone who's generous, someone who deeply cares about what they're giving to. Those are the best stories.
Okay. Do you take into consideration that for some charities, a $25,000 gift or $40,000 gift may be very large? Do they have to be gifts in the millions?
I think a $25,000 gift to a major university is maybe not as a proportionate gift. But to answer the question more broadly, no, there's not a threshold.
Okay.
It's really a question of is that a meaningful gift to the organization?
Okay. And what would you like to see in the pitch? What do you need to know initially to determine whether you'd like to go ahead?
Well, I need a sense of time. If they want to do it tomorrow, then, and I do stories that, you know, happen tomorrow. There's a story that I've had to run today that will run on Monday, and it's a very quick turnaround. So okay. I need a sense of time. Certainly need a sense of the amount of the gift, and I need a sense of who the person is.
Okay.
Oftentimes I'll get a email where someone will say, well, I have this idea of someone who might want to do something, and it's usually 9 times out of 10 doesn't come to fruition.
Mm.
So it needs to be a pretty solid
okay.
proposal.
Skip the inchoate ones that are still kind of vague, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about the idea of follow-up phone call? Like if somebody emails you a pitch and then follows up with a phone call to say, I just want to make sure you got my email. Does that there are some journalists who get very turned off by that and don't appreciate the double contact. How do you feel about that?
I try to be friendly to everyone that calls.
Very thoughtful. Okay. 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 Calls a reasonable number of times.
A reasonable number.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to say about pitching you?
No, just reach out to me. My email's at the bottom of every story online, so it should be pretty easy to get me.
And they're very easy to find. Just Google Melanie West or Melanie Grace West.
Correct.
GRAYCE. And Donor of the Day, and you'll find many, many columns. Donor of the Day. So since you've written the majority of the 500,
mm-hmm.
You see some trends, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
What's something that you're seeing happening more often?
I'm seeing some good trends, I think.
Okay.
You know, I'm seeing a lot more people acknowledging the need to give locally. People who have made their wealth in New York and in the region and who feel it's their responsibility to support the city.
Mm-hmm.
Either they've come from here. Many of them have been born in Brooklyn, but they have a very good awareness that the need is great close to home. That isn't to suggest that there aren't a tremendous number of people who are giving to their alma maters and states away,
sure.
But it is to say that there's this awareness that there is a need in the city. And I think that we can partially thank Mayor Bloomberg for setting that trend and making that awareness known, especially among his friends and colleagues.
Now, should we point out that, just going back to stories that are appropriate, there needs to be some metropolitan area connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you make sure that's clear?
Well, the donor of the organization needs to be in the area.
Okay. New York, New Jersey.
And Connecticut, correct.
There has to be some connection, either the charity or the donor.
Right. Well, the column runs in the greater New York section, yeah. So we're not reporting on what happened in California.
Okay. But the show is heard worldwide,
I see.
I just want to make sure that people know there's got to be that New York, New Jersey, Connecticut connection. Okay. Aside from local giving, what else are you seeing?
It's great. For me, again, people, I think, are choosing not to give anonymously. They're choosing to set an example. They're choosing to encourage their colleagues as well. I had a gentleman who was a donor not but a couple months ago, and he gave a $2 million gift to Bridgeport Hospital, which is in Connecticut.
Okay.
And he said one of the reasons why he gave the gift is because he wanted to make, you know, set the example for other people. And basically he said, if, you know, people look at me and say, hey, he can give $2 million, I can do at least that much. And in this particular gift, the gentleman is Joel Smilo. He had the cardiac unit named for him. And so I think naming gifts are also, you know, compelling to people. You know, in so few words, he said that effectively, if I can have a named gift for $2 million, I presume that many of my neighbors can also have a similar gift.
Yeah. And that's pretty well known in fundraising circles. That
correct.
If we can get somebody to stand up at a gala, let's say, or identify themselves somehow and say, I did it. In fact, in board meetings, it's sometimes used to. I did it, and I'm challenging all of you to do it. Sounds like something similar to what Jules was doing.
Joel. And then Jules Kroll, he's a gentleman who's made his millions in global consulting and sort of
security.
Corporate security, right?
Yeah.
He gave a $2 million gift to John Jay College, and he, again, wanted that to be a very public gift to inspire others to give to John Jay and to other city university establishment, colleges,
mm-hmm.
To grow their fundraising profile as a place where, yes, you can give gifts here. There's another gentleman I did a story on very recently. His name is Henry Van Amerengen. He's quite well known in the gay, lesbian, and bisexual, transgender community. He funds a lot of causes, and he gave $1 million to In the Life Media, and he never gives a named gift. He only gives anonymously. And the reason why he gave this gift, to your point, is he wanted to inspire others to give, and it was a matching gift or a challenge gift.
And do you find that it's usually the charity that encourages the person to step out of anonymity, or is it the donor thinking of it on their own?
I don't think the charity can. I don't think the charity can be persuasive enough to get someone who would give anonymously to suddenly put their name to it. I think the individual wants to do it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I could see a charity trying.
Oh, sure.
Because they'd like to motivate the same, similar gifts. And we have just about a minute before a break.
Sure.
You've seen something in terms of gifts being split up, split gifts.
Yeah, I think this is a good idea.
Some trend there?
Some donors that I've spoken with have decided, especially for college endowments, to give a gift that, you know, may endow a chair, but also to give a gift at the same time to scholarships. So something that can be used in the present and something that is a future gift that the university can draw on.
Oh, okay. So seeing, current and then planned gifts or deferred endowment type gifts.
Correct.
Paired together.
Right.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll take a break there. And when we return, Melanie West will stay with me, doyen of the day, and I hope you do too.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is psychic medium Betsy Cohen, host of the show The Power of Intuition. Join me at talkingalternative.com Mondays at 11 a.m. Call in for a free psychic reading. Learn how to tune into your intuition to feel better and to create your optimum life. I'm here to guide you and to assist you in creating the life that you deserve. Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. on talkingalternative.com.
Hi, I'm Carol Ward from the Body Mind Wellness Program. Listen to my show for ideas and information to help you live a healthier life in body, mind, and spirit. You'll hear from terrific guests who are experts in the areas of health, wellness, and creativity. So join me every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on TalkingAlternative.com. Professionals serving community.
Hi, this is Nancy Tatro from Speak Spin Radio. Speak Spin Radio is an exploration of the world of communication, how it happens and how to make it better, because the quality of your communication has a direct impact on the quality of your life. Tune in Mondays at 2 p.m. on TalkingAlternative.com, where I'll be interviewing experts from business, academia, the arts, and new thought. Join me Mondays at 2 p.m. and get all your communications questions answered on Speak Spin Radio.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Melanie West writes the Donor of the Day column for the Wall Street Journal. She's with us. But she doesn't only write the Donor of the Day column. Just yesterday, she had a piece on Howard Buffett, son of the very well-known philanthropist and billionaire. What's happening in the Buffett family, Melanie, that you covered yesterday?
Well, I had the great opportunity to visit Mr. Buffett on his farm in the middle of Illinois, beautiful part of the country, and ride in his tractor as we work the fields for a little bit.
All right, already I have to stop you. I'm sorry. Yeah, but his tractor has GPS.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this isn't just your regular old puffing black smoke tractor, though he did start out with that. This is a pretty sophisticated piece of equipment. It's more like what I would call like a robot, a giant farm robot.
Okay. But I read GPS in a tractor, and I initially wondered why you need GPS. I mean, isn't a tractor pretty much just up and down the rows? Why is there a GPS in a tractor?
It's harder than you think.
All right, New Yorker is oversimplifying the
Don't you need GPS
farming?
When you travel out of the city?
I do, but how far does he take his tractor?
He's got quite a bit of land, and actually speeds the process up. And I'm going to be honest.
More than just back and forth?
It's more than just back and forth. There is some technicality to it, and you want to plant your rows straight. If you don't, you're going to have a messed up crop.
Okay. I just envisioned a lot of turn left.
No. It does it on its own.
Oh, it guides the tractor on its own.
Yes.
Oh, it's more than just telling you how to go.
Oh, absolutely. No. It's not that kind of thing. It's a GPS operated in the sense where it's like not off by an inch.
Oh, excellent. Okay. All right. That was a digression.
Okay.
An important one, because that didn't come out. This is in detail. It did not come out in the story. The sophistication of his GPS actually drives the tractor. It doesn't just say turn left, turn right. Okay. Oh,
and it plots exactly where each seed gets dropped. I mean, it's really quite amazing.
Okay.
In the last few years, Mr. Buffett has turned his attention to domestic hunger. As you know, his foundation, it's about a $225 million foundation, has primarily funded work in international development.
Okay. This is the Howard Buffett
Correct.
Foundation.
Correct.
Yes.
This is the middle son of the billionaire investor.
Okay.
And he, in recent years, decided that there was more he could do closer to home. For many years, he has supported things throughout Decatur and Illinois and Nebraska, local charities. But he has become more aware that hunger has a different look than what we might think of it. And in rural areas, it's really quite an issue. Mm. Feeding America, the charity that Mr. Buffett has partnered with, reports that, you know, the greatest levels of food insecurity in the country are primarily in rural areas, not in urban areas. Their statistic is 55%. So, with this, he looked closer to home, began doing more research. He funded with Feeding America a giant map called, I think it's called Bridge the Meal Gap or the Meal Gap. And it basically takes a county by county approach of where hunger is in America. And he funded that project with some other partners. Based on that, he decided he could do more. And for the last few years, he's been thinking about a project that would directly get farmers invested in hunger in their community. Now, in rural areas, you have to think about it, you know, who are the leaders in rural areas? And it's very much the farmers.
Okay.
And so if they got together and they worked together, how could they raise money to give closer to home? And this was his problem and something that he solved. And so on Thursday of this week, he announced a plan in partnership with ADM, Archer Daniels Midland, to create a program where farmers give a portion of their crop to Feeding America.
Archer Daniels Midland, very big agribusiness
Correct.
Company.
So what a farmer does is he has 950 bushels in a semi-tractor trailer. They roll up into Archer Daniels Midland. The company asks, how much of that do you want to give to charity? They can give a bushel. They can give no bushels. They can give 150 bushels.
Oh, okay.
And what happens is the amount of money for that bushel goes back to the organization.
Okay. So so we're not donating. There were some comments to your piece that suggested that there was the raw corn was being donated to food, to hunger programs.
Yeah, hungry people don't need raw corn.
No, it's very bad for the teeth, for everybody, unless you're going to pop it. But it's not a balanced meal. So they're donating
it's cash.
The proceeds
Correct.
Of the amount that they designate.
That was in the article.
Okay.
So, I can't help it.
Well, you know, people didn't read carefully.
It is a confusing idea because I think people think that there's going to be farmers who are giving food. And that is actually a secondary portion of it, which was not covered in the article. Is he wants to encourage those people to, if you're going to give money and you're going to donate some of the proceeds from your crop, why not within the gardens and the lands that you have, grow a little food and donate that to the food bank as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he, in one of his plots of land, is actually growing corn for the food bank in Decatur. And he's going to, you know, at harvest time, roll up with a bunch of sweet corn.
And the monies are going to be donated to each farmer's local
Correct.
Local food program. Say a little about that.
Right. So Feeding America has about 202 food banks in the country. 53 of those food banks directly service rural populations. So the gift in what the farmers are donating will benefit those 53 food banks. So it is staying in their community, and that's very, very compelling for the farmers. That is a key component to getting them to donate.
Stays local.
Correct.
Yeah. Not unlike what Melanie Schnoll-Begun, my first guest today, was talking about, that there's an interest in people are interested in giving locally. They want to see local impact.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is called Invest an Acre?
Correct.
Okay.
And so all of the program materials should be live now and online, and I believe it's investanacre.org. It's being primarily funded and driven by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation.
Okay. And again, that URL is investanacre.org.
I believe.
All right. Melanie West, thank you very much for being a guest.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Melanie West writes the Donor of the Day column for the Wall Street Journal and covers the philanthropy beat there. My thanks also to Melanie Schnoll-Begun for being with me and her assistant, Soraya, for all her help. Next week, Get Monthly Givers. Bob Weselowski, the president of Caring Habits, helps you get habitual monthly donors through electronic funds transfer, EFT, for those in the business. And strategic organizations raise more money. Starita Ansari is president and chief change officer at MSB Philanthropy Advisors. She wants you to organize thoughtfully around your mission, looking strategically at your inputs, outputs, and outcomes to boost your fundraising revenue. Keep up with what's coming up. Sign up for our insider email alerts on the Facebook page. Like that page if you like the show. You always know that you can listen live or archive. To catch us archive, go to nonprofitradio.net, nonprofitradio.net. That will take you to our iTunes page. And my thanks again to those who rated the show on iTunes. On Twitter, follow me. Follow the show's hashtag. Use the show's hashtag, nonprofitradio. Use it unabashedly. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is our line producer. Janice Taylor is our assistant producer. The show's social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. I sincerely hope you will be with me next week, Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern. You'll always find us at talkingalternative.com, which is the home of Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
How's your game? Want to improve your performance, focus, and motivation? Then you need Aspire Athletic Consulting. Stop second-guessing yourself. Move your game to the next level. Bring back the fun of the sport. Help your child build confidence and self-esteem through sports. Contact Dale at Aspire Athletic Consulting for a free 15-minute power session to get unstuck today. Your greatest athletic performance is just a phone call away at 801-604-0294 or visit aspireconsulting.vpweb. Motivational coaching for athletic excellence. Aspire to greatness.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Looking to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right but still haven't found the one? Want to make your current relationship as fulfilling as possible? Then tune in on Thursdays at 1 p.m. for Love in the Afternoon with Marnie Gallison. As a professional matchmaker, I've seen it all. With distinguished authors, industry gurus, and experts on everything from wine to fashion, join us as we discuss dating, relationships, and more on TalkingAlternative.com.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neo-Sage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neosage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11, New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
TalkingAlternative.com.